Jessica Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. The Philadelphia region is a lively hub of cultural activity from the Avenue of the Arts in Center City to neighborhoods in West Philadelphia and Northern Liberties to places like Doylestown in Bucks County. Residents, visitors, and tourists are going to concerts, theater productions, museums, film festivals, and the money they spend is a powerful economic engine. The result has been thousands of direct and indirect jobs and millions in local and state taxes from billions being spent. That's what the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance reports in their new study, using data from more than 300 organizations and more than 2,000 members of the public, and it's our topic for today's Radio Times. Joining us is Thomas Caden. He's the president of the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance, which is an advocacy audience development organization for arts and culture here in the Philadelphia region. He's also chief architect of Engage 2020, a civic engagement initiative focusing on doubling cultural participation in Greater Philadelphia by 2020. And Tom Caden, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, Marty, it's great to be here. Thank
nice
you.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Nancy Bird. She's the president of the Bird Group. She works with grant makers and nonprofit organizations, helping them develop effective business and management strategies. She was vice president of the Philadelphia Foundation and a founding executive director of the Nonprofit Finance Fund in Philadelphia and New Jersey. And Nancy Bird, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. And Tom, let me begin with you. We do want to take apart some of these results, but was there anything surprising in this report for you?
Well, I think many of us know that there's a natural impact of arts and culture on our region. We all care a great deal about our quality of life, but I think the really important part of this research is to be able to put some numbers behind what's the economic impact in addition to the quality of life impact that we all understand. And when we do this, we're essentially looking at three big numbers for any economic impact study, which is what's the total economic footprint, what's the number of jobs created, and what are the tax revenues returned. And so the answer in this region was $3.3 billion in total economic impact, 44,000 jobs created in this region, and about $169 million in revenues returned to the citizens of Pennsylvania.
Take apart that $3.3 billion for us. Obviously, a lot of money being spent here in the Delaware Valley. What does that number represent?
Well, there are really two things that go into the calculation. The first is what's the direct impact of the arts and culture sector, and there we're looking at money spent by organizations themselves and their audiences. And then the second piece is what's the ancillary impact rippling through other industries around the region. And there, the direct impact is about $1.4 billion, and the indirect impact is about $1.9, which is how you get to the total of $3.3 billion.
And the idea that someone might go to a restaurant, or they might buy a souvenir, or they might spend money in as a result of going to a museum, for instance.
Right. One of the things that we try and do with report is make it very digestible for anyone to follow. And so we actually create three examples in it where we follow essentially dollars as they ripple through the economy with what begins at a cultural event and then ripples through to restaurant spending and retail spending all the way down to all the people that are employed as a result of that initial activity that was catalyzed by the cultural sector.
Which is how you get to $3.3 billion.
Which is how you get to $3.3 billion.
Nancy, let me get you in on the conversation. Mm-hmm. What do you make of this study?
Well, I think this, for me anyway, the big takeaway is that Philadelphia has its own stimulus program going on in the arts industry sector. And the political discussion around economic recovery, focusing on lower and middle class growth, entrepreneurism, small business development, diversity in business, this is all encapsulated in this GPCA report, which I think is really terrific for our area. Because when you scratch beneath these numbers, it's not just about the tourists who come in and go to restaurants or sleep in hotel rooms. It's about the people who live here who are earning money from ancillary services supporting the arts community. And we're talking about not only restaurants, but janitorial services, website designers, people like me who are in the consulting business, parking lot attendants. If you ever attend an Arden event on a Friday night, every parking lot around the Arden is filled. So this has, I think, a very broad reach, and it goes beyond what I think we're talking about in terms of direct services for the arts community.
Well, you use the word stimulus, and Tom, if I can go back to you, how much of the money coming in is a result of stimulus money from the federal government, even government from the state and city government here in Philadelphia?
You know, I think there's a sort of a common perception that government subsidizes arts and culture heavily. And that may be true in other countries, but it's really not very true in ours. So one of the things that we took a look at in the study was essentially what's the investment at the local level and at the state level. And the answer is, at the local level, we're receiving about $74 million in benefit from the sector, but only spending about $28 million. Mm-hmm. So the additional revenues that are generated actually go to pay for other important public services, education, public safety, healthcare, things that that we all care about.
But does that mean that what we're really talking about in many ways are people paying out of their pocket and going to a play or going to a museum or going to a film festival?
Yeah, I mean, it takes a village, essentially, to put on a cultural event. One of the things that that we actually discovered last year is that the average price of a ticket in this region is around $15, but the average cost of producing the event that you attend is around $46. So that wide gulf between 15 and 46 is made up in a whole host of reasons, of which government is a tiny, tiny fraction. The bulk is made up by individual contributors, mm-hmm. foundations, corporations who are helping to make up the difference and ensure that there's wide access to culture and that the cost of participation is affordable.
Let me get back to you on that, Nancy. The role, I guess, of nonprofits and foundations in supporting this broad-based arts and culture community.
Well, I think one of the reasons why Philadelphia has become such an art mecca and it's such a large arts industry is because back in the early 90s, even late 80s, there were a number of foundations that were focused on supporting the arts. I mean, our biggest foundations in the city, as well as corporations who, as you know, at one time were based here, and they were all civic boosters for the arts. That's a lot of the reason why we have so much investment in the arts by the grant-making community. And then, of course, the donors. There are a significant number of donors who are not just paying subscriptions and single ticket sales, but they're also paying to help invest in those organizations for the long run.
Becoming, in a sense, members.
Donors, members, yes. And not just in the arts organizations that we all know, the big ones, but also the community-based organizations, arts organizations that not only dot Philadelphia, but the surrounding area. Some of those organizations are really the first access that someone has, a child or an adult has, to the arts. And then they move on to the art museum and the ballet and the orchestra. But they learn there.
I know, Tom, I know you didn't look at New York, which I think is sort of a world unto itself when it comes to arts and culture. But you did look at some other regions across the country. And I must say, at least based on these findings, that the greater Philadelphia area does extremely well.
We do. There were actually 182 cities and regions that participated in this research. And we looked at Philadelphia both as a city and as a region, and it really doesn't matter which way you look at us. We score in the top tier either way. And actually, in terms of the jobs created, we were the number one region that was surveyed in this research. So a really strong job generator. The other thing that we learned is that we create about 11 jobs per 1,000 people here, which is double the national average. So it gives you a sense of the extent to which arts and culture is an integral part of our mm-hmm. economy as compared to economies in other parts of the country.
I know you don't get rich working in the world of arts and culture. Are these, though, either modest or middle class or even good-paying jobs, would you say?
Well, again, I think the really important thing to think about when you're looking at the economic impact of culture is not just the sector itself, but the spin-off activity that occurs as a result of it. Arts and culture is an initiator for other activity that makes a region attractive to people who want to live here. It stimulates creativity in a whole host of industries and businesses, which is why our corporate sector cares so much about what's going on in terms of arts and culture. So when we look at the distribution of jobs, we want to look not just at the distribution of jobs in the cultural sector, but we want to think about what's the overall impact on the region's economy. And there, we're actually quite diversified.
One of the ways to look at that is by looking at the neighborhoods that have developed as a result of this arts generator. So think about Center City, that with a variety of new apartment buildings, but not just the center of the city, but Fishtown and Northern Liberties and Old City and South Philadelphia and the inner ring suburbs, Lansdowne, for instance. These are areas that have been built as a result of arts activity.
Is it also, and I'm thinking of New York, but also other places like San Francisco, maybe even Boston, that Philadelphia is, by comparison, a more affordable place to live, and perhaps that allows for more artists and people engaged in the creative arts to live and work here?
Yeah, no question. And I think several publications have recently documented the migration of people out of places like New York to Philadelphia because of our attractiveness. Part of it is about our location. Part of it is about the pre-existing cultural sector that's here. And part of it is about affordability. But once you reach a critical mass of people in your region, you become an arts and culture city. And that's what's happening in Philadelphia. And I think that's some of what's being borne out in this data.
Can you do a little more trickle down for us? Let's say someone does go to the theater. That's the direct money that's being spent. Help us understand the indirect money and where that might go.
Sure. So if you think about sort of the initial activity being the purchase of a theater ticket,
right.
Nancy mentioned earlier that from that someone could typically dine out. Right. That restaurant bill then pays a waiter and a food supplier. The food supplier may employ several people at their organization, so that may fund a purchasing agent and a local produce supplier who in turn employs someone else who's a seed supplier. And one of the things that's unique about the Philadelphia region is we're actually also home to a number of food distribution and manufacturing companies, so we do a better job of retaining those dollars in this region than some other cities do.
Which spends it in other parts of the country, you're saying?
Right. So we're actually, because of the nature of our economy here, we capture and retain more dollars.
Well, I was looking at your business impact, which includes things like finance, insurance, real estate, accommodation, food services. Down near the bottom is mining. What are you referring to there, mining? How is mining helped by someone buying a ticket here in Philly?
Yeah, no, I think it's right. One of the things that we take a look at is again, the total impact that spreads out across all the sectors of the economy. And as I recall, that one was fairly small.
Yes, it is.
But this analysis that's done is actually done by Georgia Tech University on behalf of all 182 communities that participate. And they use our local surveys, but they also layer that with Commerce Department data and Bureau of Labor Statistics data to ensure that there's essentially consistency across the study across the country.
Nancy, you want to add to that? In terms of sort of just understanding all the facts and figures
mm-hmm.
here.
Well, I think that what we should keep in mind first and foremost is that artists or those that are associated with the arts, even supporting the arts industry, are by their very nature entrepreneurial. They are positive. They are optimistic. They want to build. Even when they shouldn't be building or growing their organizations, they have those visions of growth. So these are people who are very invested in building this community and sustaining this community.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Nancy Bird and Tom Caden about a new report by the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance saying that arts and culture is a economic boon to the Delaware Valley. And we have Nick Stuccio waiting in the wings, the producing director of the Philadelphia Live Arts Festival and the Philly Fringe. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Conquer Cancer supports WHYY and announces the Pillowcase Pajama Party, Friday, September 28th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Please Touch Museum. Children can explore the museum, share story time with Chica and the Pajanimals, march in the PJ Parade, and more. Presented by Teva Pharmaceuticals in partnership with the Philadelphia Eagles. The event supports children with cancer and other life-changing illnesses. For tickets, conquercancer.org. That's conquercancer.org.
I'm Mike and Scott. Listener support is vital to WHYY, and we'll be asking for yours during our upcoming membership campaign. But the October buyback is your chance to help give us a head start. Make a pledge during our October buyback, and for every 750 donations we receive, you'll buy back one day. This means one less day of pledge and one more day of news without membership breaks. Do your part at whyy.org/support. Thank you.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, This Is the Week That Is, the election special, written and performed by Philadelphia's own Jennifer Childs and the This Is the Week That Is ensemble. 1812's annual political satire features a script that changes with the headlines and up-to-the-minute reporting on all the news that's fit to skewer. Tickets available at 215-592-9560 or at 1812productions.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. So if you've been to a play or a dance or a concert or a gallery recently, if you have, you have helped to contribute millions in state and local taxes to the Delaware Valley. You've probably spent a lot of money, and you've helped to create thousands of jobs. And that's what the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance found in a new report that they just issued. And we're talking with Tom Caden. He's the president of the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance. Nancy Bird, the president of the Bird Group, working with grant makers and nonprofit organizations. And listening in and now joining us is Nick Stuccio. He's the producing director of the Philadelphia Live Arts Festival and the Philly Fringe, begun, I believe, in 1997. Just concluded three weeks of performance. And Nick, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here, Marty.
So have you recovered from the latest Fringe Live Arts Festival?
No, I'm not. I'm completely bleary-eyed. And actually, just as the festival ended, I had a show on my calendar in New York that I absolutely had to go to. Right. And it was, of course, Einstein on the Beach. This is a very famous Philip Glass, Robert Wilson opera. It was 4.5 hours, no intermission. I did it. It was amazing. It was beautiful, worth seeing. Yes. But I was hurting watching that. Well, about my 100th show in 3 weeks.
And that's a lot of arts and culture.
It is.
Even going back to 1997, I remember interviewing you when you had this idea for the Philly Fringe. Looking back over, what is that, 15 years, 16 years, what do you see as perhaps even the biggest change here in the region when it comes to arts and culture?
I've seen a lot. Now that we've been around for, 16 years, we've grown up, there's been a generation, almost two generations of folks that know our work. But I think this one key thing I think is important to say, and that is I think audiences' tastes are really have moved to the left. They're really interested in international ideas, big ideas, more experimental ideas. I really think that's great. I think that's a mark of a great city. I can trace that evolution over the years. I remember bringing a show 2003, a great show from New York City called The New York City Players, a great director. And we did it at the Arden Theater. About 400 people came. And by the end of that hour and 10 minutes, there were about 15 people left in the house. And I can see those moments. And then, a good friend of mine, Aaron Posner, who he also hated the work, but knew that I loved the work and thought it was great, people should see it. He said, bring that work back next year. And much to my board's dismay, I brought that work back, a new work by that same artist, back next year, and people really turned a corner, found it, and really loved it. And I've seen that over the years with different artists, and I think it's great.
That's actually very, very interesting. Let me turn to you, though, Nancy Bird. I don't want to put Nick Stuccio in a position of promoting his own organization, but nonetheless, as you look at the Philadelphia Live Arts Festival and the Philly Fringe, it's now just finished its 16th year. Mm-hmm. What do you think explains its success?
Well, I probably have been working with Nick, or he's been involved with NFF for about 15 of those 16 years. And part of that was about growth. Part of that was about the evolution of their mission, of their vision. But what I have seen over the last maybe 3 or 4 years is this tipping point in the taste of audiences. Some of it has to do with age change. If you look at if you go into a live arts performance and you look at the crowd and you see, well, they're no longer the 40s, 50s, and 60s crowd. They really skew very young, many of them, and not just for Fringe, but for live arts, but also because I think Nick has sort of led this evolution of taste, and that has changed the way the city thinks about the arts and expects, even in the traditional arts. So if you walk into the Art Museum or the Wilma Theater or PTC, you will see some of that change in production.
Well, picking up on that, Tom, I mean, do you, I don't know if to call it left, but maybe just a little more open-minded or a little more progressive. Do you see some changing tastes here in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, it's all over, and you know, both in Philadelphia and in the suburbs as well, we see that evolution. So, Friday night, I was actually at one of Nick's shows, Sequence 8, which is a circus group from Montreal, and I brought my daughter and her friends. So, you know, here you've got a couple 16-year-olds in the audience who are sort of equally there, and we're sort of cultivating the next generation. Saturday night, I was actually out at Longwood Gardens in Kennett Square. Where they have the Bruce Monroe light exhibit still going on. And it was fascinating. In the middle of a thunderstorm, I saw all these people sort of running around. There are kids running around in the dark at Longwood Gardens next to older people on electric strollers. It was the most curious mix of people, but to see that sort of multi-generational group all in the same place, all having a great time, having a great experience is, I think, again, sort of the evolution of culture in this region, which is really exciting to see.
Well, that sounds like something you might see at the Philadelphia Live Arts Festival or Philly Fringe, people running around in wheelchairs and lightning coming down. Nick, how do you define success? And I don't know whether you've tallied up how many people came to the Fringe Live Arts this year and if there was money made or who was making money. How do you tabulate that?
We're still counting everything. It takes a while, but I think how we tabulate success is how much money did we lose? Did we lose a lot of money, or we just lose a little bit? I mean, Tom and Nancy are right. The ticket sales are only a part of the money we need to do what we do. So, I mean, every show loses money. It's just a question of how much.
Wow.
But it was a great year. I will say it's a great year, especially the last couple of years. We've seen this huge jump in audience, which has been fantastic, and I think part of that has to do with just being around for 16 years. I was in the Avignon Festival this summer, which has been around for 66 years,
wow.
And I see a mature festival like that. Every single citizen of Avignon can tell you all about the festival. You know, the cab driver can tell you about this artist that's showing up next week that they've seen before. You know, the generations and generations have grown up with that festival, and I'm seeing finally that after 16 years, although sometimes we do feel like a 16-year-old for sure. We're still, you know, growing our capacity. We're understanding what it's like to bring big international shows. We're understanding how to raise money, because in the end, that's the limiting factor always. But we've learned how to present pretty much anything that's fantastic around the world we can now bring. We understand how to do it, how to contextualize it, how to translate an international technical writer to our specifications for our theaters and so on. It's just taken a lot of time, and we're still working. We're still growing that capacity.
Well, that's interesting, Nancy, which is to talk about something that I think many people would consider successful, but as Nick said, and it's how much money are we losing this go-round?
Well, you always need, you know, the nonprofits have to have a third line of business, and that third line of business is the subsidy business. I don't even like to use the word subsidy, but essentially what it is fundraising. If they didn't need those dollars between costs and revenue, then they wouldn't be in the nonprofit arena. So that subsidy line needs to be raised every year, and the real question is years that where there's no recession, it's a lot easier than it is when there is a recession. But one thing I will say about this arts community, particularly the performing arts community, what Nick has said about sophistication and growing, becoming more professional. I think that's happened across the field in this town. If you look at particularly the theaters, they all sort of grew up at the same time. Mm-hmm. Well, look at the quality of work that's coming out of our theater community now. That, in turn, is bringing more money by donors and by increased ticket sales. One thing to also look at that Nick didn't talk about was his fundraising event during the festival called Feastival. Well, I think, you know, Nick, you know the answer to this better than I do, but I think it's sold out.
Right.
And if you think about what that means in terms of dollars in, it's just remarkable.
Well, Tom, I mean, it's one thing to be an artist. It's another to raise money.
Right.
You know, it's like two sides of the brain at work, right?
No question. And I think, you know, one of the things I think that's been exciting in Philadelphia over over this last 5 years, because the last time we did the economic analysis was 5 years ago, is that our attendance has actually continued to grow through the recession, which is really remarkable. You think about how many industries can talk about a growth in demand during the recession, but our attendance numbers actually in this region grew 5% in the recession, which is really, really important. It did not make up for the loss in contributed income, public support, corporate contributions as well. It made up part of it. Individuals actually increased their giving as well, but they were not able to make up the difference. The resulting impact on bottom lines for cultural organizations is that where their margins were thin going into the recession, we can now document that they actually went negative during the recession. And so the sustainability of the sector going forward, even with its growth in attendance, is something that we're obviously all very vested in, given its importance to the region as a whole.
Indeed, and that's Thomas Caden. He's the president of the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance. Also with us, Nancy Bird, president of the Bird Group, and by telephone, Nick Stuccio, producing director of the Philadelphia Live Arts Festival and the Philly Fringe, talking about a new report put out by the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance, looking at how arts and culture organizations here in the Delaware Valley contribute to the local economy. And again, we want to hear from you. We want to know what you've seen, how you spend your arts and culture dollars. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Nick, have you gotten good asking for money?
Heck yes, I have. I've had to. And I have to tell you, the folks at the broad array of donors that do support us, they're all pretty great, I have to say. They're generally, and that's what's great about Philadelphia, they love this work. They're super interested. In fact, they are the most curious people I know, our donors. How great is that? But I will go back to this event, Feastival. We were trying to grow through this recession. It's been tough. So we hatched this, our board, actually, Audrey Teichman and Richard Vega, two of our board members, hatched this notion of, let's just make the biggest party we can imagine with the best food possible. And, of course, food and restaurants and performance go together as well as, I don't know, peanut butter and jelly.
Exactly.
Use that bad metaphor. But,
no, that's good.
And that's been terrific. So we made this huge party, 82 chefs, amazing food. We're the beneficiary of this, and it's worked. And we've gotten corporate underwriting for that event in a way that when I say to them, please support this wonderful show from Australia about, you know, disabled actors, I get, you know, not a lot of response. We say, you know, here's the party of the year in Philadelphia. We're able to get support. So by whatever means necessary, is how we're raising money, and this seems to be a good formula.
Well, let me throw something else on the table. And Nancy, I'm going to go to you. And Nick, we're hearing that your organization is either in the process or has bought this old pumping station at Race in Columbus?
That's right. Much to the Nancy's been trying to convince me for now 15 years. Not to buy.
I understand. We'll give her her shot, but go ahead, Nick.
But yes, we are. And this is, I'm all joking aside. Nancy has appropriately cautioned us that to go into this with our eyes wide open, and we have. And this is going to be a great, new, fantastic arts facility, an art center on the waterfront, which is a great, you know, part of Philadelphia that remains undeveloped substantially. And so this is going to be this perfect new home for us. Every year, as people who know what we do know, we surface every year in some new place, and it's never quite right. We spend a lot of time, energy, and money trying to find this hub site for the festival every year. Well, now, as we mature and grow, we recognize the need for a stable home base, year in, year out, place where people know to go to buy tickets, to hang out with artists, to socialize with audiences and artists in a late-night environment. And so we're going to buy. We purchased this building just on the demolition, and we're about to move forward. But the other great thing about this building is, in addition to our once-a-year operation, we'll have a year-round, week-in, week-out place for audiences to come and see contemporary art performances. You know, given this great city of arts and culture, we still don't have that place in the ecology of Philadelphia, and we're going to fill that niche. And I think it's going to be great for audience development, great for the local artists, and also, as major international work tours, we can finally have a place we can jump in and say, here's our space to come, because hardly any companies ever tour in September during the festival. But now there's a great economy in that, so it'll be terrific for the city. When we finally finish raising all the money, we'll we'll move forward with it.
Well, and that's maybe where you come in here, Nancy. And I'm not asking you to convince Nick to not do something that they've already done. But in speaking even more broadly, in terms of buying a building, and we see all around us organizations that are either building buildings or rehabbing or buying buildings and looking for that permanent home, as Nick was talking about. Doesn't that make some sense?
Absolutely. And in the case of Nick and Live Arts, I jumped over to the dark side, partly because after all of these years, what began to make sense for him was this recognition, realization that his mission was changing. And that mission was related to this sort of year-round presentation and exposure to audiences of this work and to build new audiences for Philadelphia. And that's the only reason why one should go from a sort of a part-time rental building to a year-round institution that you call your own, because it's about the mission of the organization. Right. And that's what moved this project forward, I think, so expeditiously, and having a board who was a backstop to the artistic vision, which we all deal with executive directors of arts institutions. So Richard and his board took control of sort of wresting that kind of control and committing to moving forward as soon as 90% of the dollars are raised. Well, that's what you're supposed to do.
Oh,
so, what happens is that with other organizations that don't do that, or that build buildings that are 4 or 5 or 20 times larger than their annual budget, that's how they get into trouble. In this case, this building project will be probably 2.5 times their budget, which is a very that's a reasonable project
size.
It's a
manageable amount of money.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right. Tom, you want to add? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think the important thing with all these projects is that there's a thoughtful plan, not just about raising the money for the bricks and mortar, but for sustaining it and sustaining both the building, the operations within it, and the culture that it's going to move forward. And Nancy used the operative word there, which is mission. If it's mission-focused and there is a plan for it, then development makes sense. I think what we want to be careful of is that frequently you don't want to get enamored with the infrastructure and lose sight of the culture that is supposed to happen within it.
Don't they call that an edifice complex? I think perhaps
that's
Nancy,
absolutely
you called it
absolutely
that.
True.
And Nick, we have to say goodbye to you in about a minute, but are you already planning for the next Live Arts Festival, Philly Fringe?
Oh, yes. In fact, this morning I booked a show for 2014.
Really?
From Berlin, yeah. No, we're about 3/4 of the way through 13 and looking at 14 at the moment.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on Radio Times. Congratulations on the Philadelphia Live Arts Festival and Philly Fringe. Thanks a lot, Nick.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And that's Nick Stuccio, and he's the producing director. And staying with us for the rest of the hour is Thomas Caden, president of the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance, and that's an advocacy audience development organization for arts and culture organizations here in Philadelphia, in the region, chief architect of Engage 2020, and that's focusing on doubling cultural participation in Greater Philadelphia by 2020. And the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance has a new report just out looking at how arts and culture is adding to the broader economy here in the Delaware Valley. Also with us, Nancy Bird, president of the Bird Group. She works with grant makers and nonprofits, was the vice president of the Philadelphia Foundation and a founding executive director of the Nonprofit Finance Fund. And we want to know what you've seen lately. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Fox Broadcasting Company, presenting the season premiere of New Girl and the new comedies Ben and Kate and The Mindy Project, airing tonight at 8 on Fox 29.
Supporting WHYY, Arden Theater Company, presenting the winner of the 2010 Pulitzer for Drama and Tony Award-winning Next to Normal, on stage September 27th through November 4th. This electric and emotional musical follows one family's struggle to maintain connection amidst crisis. Set to a contemporary score, Next to Normal's bold storytelling expands the scope of subject matter for musicals. For tickets, 215-922-1122 or normalinphilly.com. I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Everyone knows partisanship has crippled the political process. Former Congressman Nikki Edwards has some ideas to fix it. Big ideas, but also, how about both parties speak from the same podium in Congress? These stories and a check-in on the UN. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY and is committed to delivering comprehensive care in an environment where respect, compassion, and quality come first. To learn how they help make lives better every day, ChesterCountyHospital.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. Just to recap, the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance just issued a report that found that many arts and cultural organizations in the Philadelphia area are a boon to the region's economic vitality. They generate millions in state and local taxes from billions in expenditures and have created thousands of jobs. We're digging deeper into this study with Tom Caden, the president of the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance, and with Nancy Bird of the Bird Group, who helps organizations deal with some of the challenges faced by whether it's an economy or PR or raising money. And we do want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Nancy, just picking up on we were talking with Nick about this new building for the Philadelphia Live Arts part of his organization. But I wonder how some organizations get in trouble.
Well, struggles with buildings have been going on for about 20 years. There's been a building boom in Philadelphia or the region and actually across the country till probably about a few years ago when the recession just stopped it cold. In the early days, 1990, when the Tuttleman Center opened at the Franklin Institute, that was really the first big building expansion that took place. But shortly after that, when the William Penn Foundation decided to support small and medium-sized organizations, build the Avenue of the Arts, they had this vision that there would be a central avenue for the arts in Philadelphia. It was a wonderful vision, but what happened was they, like other investors, other grant makers, invested in small and medium-sized organizations that didn't have the wherewithal to manage a building in the long run, which is what Tom referred to about long-term sustainability. And so that's what led us to having organizations build buildings and then not be able to manage them, which is the reason why the Nonprofit Finance Fund opened up to advise organizations on how to do thoughtful planning. But when you think about the genesis of facility building, it's really as a result of a few things. One is, civic boosterism. The board members want to ensure that this community is a place where people want to come and participate in the arts. The other is what's called the Bilbao effect. Hire a fancy architect with a great name and put a stamp on your building. And in the meantime, you'll spend for that name, which I think is a little bit about what happened at Kimmel. We put a halt to it at the library. And then there's always the, we deserve a building. My neighbor's doing it. Everybody's funding it. We're just going to jump right in and do that too, and
without thinking of all the
future
costs.
Why are you building a building? A facility is a means to an end, not the end itself.
Well, let me just pick up on the Kimmel, a place that I've gone, like a lot of people. And while the actual performance spaces are lovely, they've been able to tweak some of the acoustics, and I would say sounding better and better. The public doesn't seem invited inside, and I know they're trying to deal with that. But when you think of a building, you have to think. It seems to me beyond just what's going to be happening with the artists or the people that work there.
Absolutely, and I think that the artistic decision, the aesthetic decision to build a building that looked like that may have been the ultimate challenge.
Yeah.
It's actually three buildings in one. If you think about the glass overlay that has to be maintained every year at a very significant cost, the interior court plus the performance spaces themselves, it really became something that would be very difficult to sustain through fundraising or ticket sales over time.
Go ahead, Tom.
That said, I think one of the things that's that's really important about this sector is that it's remarkably adaptive. You know, I think you don't have to look just at the cultural industry. I think you can look at just about every industry and households across this country and understand that sort of in, you know, 10 years ago there was excess in almost every industry in terms of building or whatever. But I think what's remarkable is sort of the speed with which we've adapted to that. So I think there's a recognition that building in infrastructure needs to be tempered, it needs to be carefully planned or whatever. I think you see big changes in terms of the cultural product, and Nancy alluded to it a second ago, but the new vision for the Kimmel as a civic space, right, to recreate it and the investment that's happening there around a civic space, and you look at the Philadelphia International Festival of the Arts, which was here 2 years ago, and will come back again this spring, I think is an example of essentially making the space more public, more involved, and you know, seeing the 200,000 people who are on Broad Street on the final day of the festival a couple of years ago reminds me that culture can be for all of us. And I think the key for us is to be adaptive and not to be sort of shackled to the past, but to think about what's the evolution and what do the people of this region really want from their cultural sector. And I think the sector is ready to make those changes.
Well, let's find out from our listeners as well. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about arts and culture, their influence here in the Delaware Valley, beyond just even the economic engine that they represent. We're curious about whether you've gone to some plays recently or a dance recital or a concert or a gallery, a museum, perhaps a film festival. I don't know if you include movies in your arts and culture or not. And do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. If you have some limited dollars, how do you decide where you're going to spend it when it comes to things like arts and culture? Again, that phone number, 1-888-477-WHYY. Tom, let me go back to something you said. And this report says that the region has survived pretty well in deeply distressing, I would say, economic times. But as you look ahead to the next 5 years, what do you anticipate?
Well, you know, again, I think one of the really important contributors of the sector is the way that it helps communities grow up. Nancy mentioned a few earlier, and it's not just within Philadelphia, it's also within the region, the town that I live in, which is Media. I know when we moved there 12 years ago, half the storefronts were empty, and the catalyst for development in that borough was actually the reopening of the Media Theater. And then to watch restaurants come in and retail follow, housing prices go up, events and festivals come on, and there's now a sort of spirit of community that's happening there. And that story is playing out in neighborhoods and communities all around. So I think culture as a catalyst for community growth is really the future, and civic pride and identity is, I think, where we're headed.
And is it people coming into the city, Nancy? Is it residents using these venues for their cultural entertainment?
Absolutely. I think people do have moved into the city to be close to the arts. I mean, the empty nesters, they never would have moved back if were it not for these wonderful institutions on Avenue of the Arts. And it's not that they are not economic stimulators. Even if they are having difficulty with sustainability, they certainly are economic generators. Mm. And they create all of the other ancillary stores and businesses around that community. I will say that there's a great example of one of those organizations that rebuilt a community in Newberry, South Carolina, that completely redeveloped, the Newberry Opera House redeveloped a moribund town out as a result of this now year-round performing arts center that engages just about everybody and everybody's tastes. And it has trickled down to economic development, building office parks and new residents. It's a wonderful example of what the arts can really do in any town, not just large cities.
And is Philadelphia a place that is open to these ideas? I mean, we're hearing that it's become a more progressive place, but it has its political infrastructure, if I can say, Tom.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the responsibilities of culture within society as a whole is to be a change agent, mm-hmm. and to stimulate creativity. So, you know, we talk in this report a lot about economic impact, and we measure, you know, how many jobs did we create, what's the economic footprint, what are the tax dollars returned, but we also need to think about the non-quantifiable benefits that are so critical. So, you know, when we talk about the ability to stimulate creativity, to support the education system, right, if you think about sort of where are the new jobs going to come from in our economy as we go forward, it's going to be from people who are creative, because entrepreneurship is at the heart of our economy. So we want people who are both creative, but we also want them to be compassionate, to be able to deal with some of the civic issues that we have. So compassion and perception are also the province of arts and culture as well.
Well, and it seems, too, that, Nancy, you need to build an audience for these events as well. You need to have in the schools, and we hear about schools that are cutting back on arts and culture courses or programs.
They've been cutting back in arts and culture for, must be now 15 years, and that's where arts organizations have actually stepped in and filled that gap. So artists are going into the schools and teaching, or the kids are coming to the arts institutions themselves. There are whole programs built up around arts education, and there are some very generous grant makers and donors that are supporting that, and that's really wonderful.
Let me get, it looks like Megan from Mount Holly to join us on Radio Times. And Megan, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, hey. I love your show.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that I have, I attended one of the fringe events. I went to the Untitled Feminist Show. and then I also, on Sunday, I went to the 26th anniversary of Andrea Clearfield's salon in her home right off of South Street.
Oh, that's great.
And I recently moved back to the area from Portland, Oregon, where I'd been living for the past 10 years. And I'm just really excited to see so much going on and so much cutting-edge theater. I'm always willing to travel into Philadelphia to see live shows. I just purchased some tickets for the West Side Story with the Philadelphia Orchestra at the Kimmel Center. And there are some affordable tickets out there if you're willing to sit up close. And, you know, finances are always an issue for me. But I find that, you know, I'll spend my entertainment money going in and seeing something live as opposed to watching some movie that, you know, I can later get for super cheap, you know, and rent and watch at home. And so I'm really excited about what's going on in Philadelphia. I attended Moore College of Art my first 2 years of school and then transferred out to finish school elsewhere at a different art school. But
you're
I'm
back.
So excited to be back in the area.
That's
I'm excited
great.
About what's going on.
Well, Megan, just a quick question. How old are you?
I'm 35.
You're 35. Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Tom.
So, Megan, welcome back. We're thrilled you're back, and this is sort of exactly the story I think we want to tell. You also mentioned the issue of making sure that cultural tickets are affordable, and one of the programs that we're able to offer at the Cultural Alliance through our members is a program called Fund Savers, which is a weekly email blast of half-price tickets in the region. So anyone who's interested in sort of in picking up tickets at the last minute within the last week before the show has an opportunity to do that through our PhillyFunGuide.com website and can sign up and get a weekly email of shows and activities that are available in the region at half price called Fund Savers.
Megan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Speaking of tickets, Nancy, I have to say sometimes there's a show or a play I want to see in New York, and I have to say I generally don't go because I find the tickets are just outrageously expensive.
Mm-hmm.
How much does that figure into people's
decisions?
Well, I
think it figures in. I think it's a huge issue because you not only are you buying the ticket, but you have to travel there, and then you probably will go out to dinner or lunch, and then maybe you'll stay overnight, even if you get a half-price ticket. And the quality of the productions here are if not the same or better than what is in New York. I think there's no doubt about that. I will say, though, based on what Megan said, that the evolution of media, the social media and blogs and tweeting, all of those things really increase the level of activity, especially among young people.
Right.
And I think that's what will change. It's a real game changer for the future.
Let me see what Andre from Olney has to say. Andre, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi, Marty.
Hi,
I always listen to your show. It's always great.
Thank you.
Listen, I just came back from Miami Beach, and what I was saying to your producers that it was amazing that in the city of Miami or Miami Beach, it was very difficult to find very many cultural things, at least in terms of arts and culture, you know, art museums or different, I guess they have their music festivals and things like that. But Philadelphia seems to be, has a much more concentrated, you know, core of a wide variety of arts and things to go to. I go to the Franklin Institute and places like that. I like the museums more so than I guess theater right now. But, you know, my partner and I were just so amazed at how little there was in Miami Beach. I mean, of course, the beach is beautiful, but there was very little in terms of arts and culture that we could really find or even that have people tell us about, you know, when we ask the question. So I am impressed with what Philadelphia has to offer, and it's kind of interesting that it is somewhat of an economic engine here, whereas they have a different economic engine, you know, down there. So pretty much my comment.
Well, that's a good comment, Andre, and we didn't plant these calls, just so you know, Tom. Go ahead.
Thank you. No, I mean, there's no question that culture is part of what identifies us as Philadelphians. We've been at this for a while, and, you know, I think the exciting thing for those of us who are working in the sector is that we're not standing still. You know, we look at what's going on around the world, and we want this to be a world-class city. We want to be a world-class cultural destination. We want world-class quality of life. And, you know, I think we're vested in making sure that that our future is as bright or if not brighter than our past.
And are you optimistic? We're almost out of time, Nancy.
I am. There is, by the way, a great art museum in Miami.
just so you know, Andre.
Just so you know. But I will say that I travel all over the country to other cities and particularly places like Chicago and San Francisco and Boston, which have very deep roots in the arts. But there is nothing like Philadelphia now. And I'm a lifelong Philadelphian, so, of course, I have that kind of cynicism about being in Philadelphia.
Yes, I know.
And it truly is a big difference now when I travel. There's always something to do here in the arts. Yeah.
Well, on that happy note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Nancy Bird, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. She's the president of the Bird Group. And Thomas Caden, thank you very much as well.
Yeah, thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. He's president of the Greater Philadelphia Cultural Alliance. We also spoke with Nick Stuccio, producing director of the Philadelphia Live Arts Festival and the Philly Fringe. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about this program. Bob Ball's the engineer for today's edition of the show, and it's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.